Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, May 10th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading with the front page headline, Celebrating Mother's Day, the Matriarchs. Celebrating Mother's Day, exceeding expectations. Backbone of the Black Home, honoree, handles independent motherhood of 8 kids. This is by Luke Taylor, Urbana. In Rita Connerly's household, kids have to meet certain expectations, like their mom did. They're each required to play a sport each season. They also need to be in band, orchestra, or choir, and they must be involved in other clubs or community service. Each of my kids have abided by that expectation. And I just believe that that creates a well-rounded individual. When you're exposed to different environments, different settings, different experiences, Connerly said. That might sound like it creates a busy schedule for each kid, but she said it also makes sure they have opportunities to discover and excel in a variety of areas. It certainly does create a busy schedule for Connerly herself, who is a single mother to her 8 children. Even with her eldest son in the workforce and her eldest daughter making strides as a first-generation college student, she has plenty to do to keep up with the other 5 girls and 1 boy. It does require a combination of many things: structure, adaptability, support systems, and, I think more than anything, just my determination of wanting to be an involved and engaged parent, Connerly said. On Saturday, Connerly's work as a parent will be recognized alongside that of other local mothers who are all receiving Backbone of the Black Home Awards, including Katrina Kendall, Sandra Carter, Alicia Cunningham, Renee Smith, Camille Chapman, Tamika Miller Moody, Angelica Johnson, Charlisa Hart, Domika Light, Katina Wilcher, and Tamika Mendoza. Award founder, the Reverend Hub Burnett, said he wanted to highlight Connerly as a mom who is doing things right, helping her kids achieve and stay out of trouble of dangerous situations. She's one of the best pictures in America for what a mother should be doing in 2026, and she's doing it as a single parent, Burnett said. Her kids are doing exceptionally well, and not just one or two of them, but all of them. He said she is the epitome of what a mother should be doing. Connerly's childhood experience was very different from her kids. While she does have 3 siblings, the closest in age is 10 years older than her, meaning that she grew up almost as an only child. With many of her own children being stair-steppers and each having at least 1 sibling close in age across their range from 8 to 24, Connerly said it's been fun to be around over the years. I didn't have that sibling relationship that they have in our home, she said. So the dynamic and seeing them bond and seeing them fight and seeing them make up and just that roller coaster of emotions and watching them flourish in their relationship is one of the most beautiful things to see as a parent. Maybe they don't always get along, and maybe some are closer to one or another, but she's okay with that. We are all people, and people are sometimes difficult, and they find their people, even within my home, Connerly said. Those relationships can come into play with the open book policy Connerly holds in her home. She wants her kids to know that they can talk to her about any topic, any time, but she still finds that sometimes they're more comfortable speaking with each other than with her. Even then, whichever sibling they confide in knows they can come to mom if there is anything she needs to be worried about. If you're not comfortable speaking with me, you have siblings, you have sisters, you have a brother that you can go to, Connerly said. There's always somebody available, which is kind of a nice thing. It's just the way in which we communicate, even if that's not directly through me, finding another roundabout way, a safe person to speak with, to navigate different challenges that they may be experiencing. They help each other navigate their successes too. As a sophomore in college, Connerly's oldest daughter is already making sure to stay updated on her sisters in high school and their goals, helping them apply for college themselves, if that's what they want. Despite bookending the girls, her 24-year-old and 8-year-old sons have formed a bond too. The family works as a team, Connerly said, and she believes helping her kids learn independence will be valuable for their adult lives. With 8 children, you know, things rarely go as exactly planned, so adapting is essential. Connerly said, being resilient, being flexible, being intentional about showing my children that education, perseverance, and community involvement are important. And I don't just tell them that, I try to model it myself. Continuing on the front page, we have a Canvas outage titled, "This Breach Has Been Disastrous for a Lot of Us." A U of I professor discusses risks from cyber attack. This is by Jana Wersima, Urbana. Though the breach of learning management system Canvas may not involve social security numbers or bank account info, the compromised data could be more sensitive than just homework assignments, said Masuda Bashir, a University of Illinois professor of information sciences and member of U of I's Information Trust Institute and principal investigator and director for the Illinois Cybersecurity Scholarship Program. Your educational data actually has a lot of private information, she said. What courses are you taking? What subjects are you taking in a class in the university? How are you doing in your grades? And so a lot of personal and behavioral information is part of these records. This data can then be used for future exploitation, phishing emails, and other kinds of things. Sophisticated things because they know so much about you now, she added. Such information could also be used for stalking. As of Friday morning, U of I cybersecurity professionals and leaders continued to evaluate the risk associated with bringing Canvas at Illinois back online, officials said in a 10 a.m. update. Updates are being offered by the U of I at go.illinois.edu/26canvasincident and by the instructor at instructure.com/incidentupdate. On Thursday night, the eve of the first day of finals, Vice Provost for IT and Chief Information Officer Mareed Martin initially announced in a 4:30 p.m. mass mail that Canvas was offline due to an ongoing cybersecurity incident and that course materials would be unavailable until the problem was fixed. At 8:45 p.m., Provost John Coleman announced that all final exams and assignments for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday would be postponed for all classes, even those that don't use Canvas, for the sake of consistency and clarity. University leaders will provide more information about next steps before noon Sunday, he said. I understand this situation adds new stress and uncertainty to the end of the academic year, and I thank you for your patience as we work through this disruption, Coleman wrote. U of I Technology Services is monitoring the situation and working with Instructure, the vendor that operates Canvas, to assess data impacts. Instructure is still investigating and has not shared specific information with us regarding Illinois data included in the breach, officials said. However, neither Canvas at Illinois nor Canvas Catalog contains dates of birth, government identifiers, or financial information. According to the U of I's Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning, Canvas' state-of-the-art, user-friendly platform provides students and instructors with one central location where they can easily access their course syllabus, assignments, announcements, grades, and anything else that is pertinent to their course. Bashir was among those affected, as she uses Canvas for a course she's teaching this semester. While the final for that course is not online, it's a group project that has to be presented in class. She uses the platform for grading, and it's also where she puts teaching materials such as readings, resources, and assignments. This breach has been disastrous for a lot of us, she said. She added that this attack shows that educational systems such as Canvas need to be treated as critical infrastructure in terms of digital security. The university noted that the cyber attack has affected thousands of institutions across the globe and was not directed at UI specifically. According to Infrastructure's incident page, the company initially discovered unauthorized activity in Canvas on April 29th. We immediately revoked the unauthorized party's access, started an investigation, and engaged outside forensic experts, officials said. On May 7th, 2026, we identified additional unauthorized activity tied to the same incident. The unauthorized actor made changes to the pages that appeared when some students and teachers were logged in through Canvas. Out of caution, we temporarily took Canvas offline into maintenance mode to contain the activity, investigate, and apply additional safeguards. The perpetrator was able to engage in these activities by exploiting an issue related to Canvas Free for Teacher accounts, which have been temporarily shut down as part of the company's response, officials said. Instructure has also been in contact with the FBI, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, and international law enforcement partners. Based on the investigation so far, the data taken in the April 29 incident includes certain personal information of users at affected organizations, Instructure officials said. That includes names, email addresses, student ID numbers, and messages among Canvas users. We have found no evidence that passwords, dates of birth, government identifiers, or financial information were involved. Based on the investigation to date, we have not found evidence that data was taken during the May 7 activity. The Daily Illini reported Thursday night that some students who attempted to use Canvas saw a message from Shiny Hunters, which has claimed responsibility for the attack. The hacker group demanded that impacted schools negotiate a settlement and said that officials have until the end of the day Tuesday before everything is leaked. Some Canvas users viewed a message as part of the cybersecurity incident that contained malicious website links and other contact points, Coleman said. It is important to not click or visit these links as they can also be sources of malware or potential compromise. USA Today reported that Shiny Hunters claimed in a ransom letter that the group had accessed data from over 275 million people and almost 9,000 schools across the globe. Coleman said the university is communicating with its peers as it considers next steps. Instructure has reported that Canvas is fully back online and available for use. However, U of I officials said Thursday night that campus leaders have decided to delay reactivating the platform to assess risk. They added that while there might be talk of Canvas coming back online, faculty and students should not try to use the Canvas at Illinois or Canvas catalog system until the university gives official direction. We actually need to take digital privacy security much more seriously than we have in the past, Bashir said. Moving forward, there need to be regulations to hold companies, such as Instructure, accountable so that they provide transparent information about how data is handled and secured, she said. She also feels that digital systems need to be designed to account for human limitations, as cyber attacks sometimes rely on people making certain choices, such as clicking malicious links. Bashir has a PhD in psychology, and her work centers on aligning digital systems to be human-centered, with a focus on privacy, cybersecurity, trust, and AI. Cybersecurity is not purely a technical problem, really, she said. It really involves human behavior, usability, and organizational culture, all of those things that are really part of any security outcome. Continuing inside the front page, we have top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. For the volunteer gardeners at Krannert Art Museum, Thursday was one of the best days of the year. The helpful crew spent more than 3 hours planting 500 annuals, which in a few weeks will bring a huge amount of color to Galvin Garden, Champaign's Gloria Rayner said. A master gardener and retired teacher, Rayner coordinates a volunteer group of 23 men and women who give time and energy to a museum that has so much to showcase inside and out. The group meets on Thursday mornings from March to November. Sometimes it's to plan. Other times, like Thursday, it's to plant. Their work is appreciated by those walking by or into the museum. In an Inside Out column in the News Gazette, a weekend staple since 2019, former director John Sadle raved about Galvin Garden, which I consider the museum's first gallery. I'm convinced it is the most stunning garden in Champaign-Urbana. Rayner, in her 15th year as a volunteer, said the process is as rewarding as the results. This has developed into a community of gardening friends. Note, summer hours for Krannert Art Museum are Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, when parking nearby is free. And in history, area history, in 1926, springtime fishing parties outside of Mahomet are beginning in earnest, with many people trying their luck on the banks of the Sangamon River. The proudest fisherman yesterday was Fred Primer, who caught a fine catfish measuring 28 inches in length. In 1976, Urbana attorney Robert Aller announced that he plans to file a reverse discrimination lawsuit against the City of Champaign and the Champaign Board of Fire and Police Commissioners, charging hiring discrimination against non-minorities. Aller said the suit will be filed on behalf of two clients who have passed city placement tests but have been denied jobs on the city's police and fire departments because of a hiring freeze. The Fire and Police Board stated the hiring freeze last fall, so females and other minority group members could be recruited for tests planned for this spring. In 2011, the University of Illinois is getting $6 million from the U.S. Air Force to create a center that could revolutionize shared computer resources called cloud computing. The University Center of Excellence in Assured Cloud Computing was established by the Air Force Research Laboratory, the Air Force Office of Scientific Research, and the Urbana campus. In international history, today's highlight, on May 9, 1960, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration conditionally approved Enovid for use as the first oral contraceptive pill. On this date in 1754, The famous political cartoon, Join or Die, was first published by Benjamin Franklin in the Pennsylvania Gazette newspaper. And in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson, acting on a joint congressional resolution, signed a proclamation designating the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day. And in local news from our communities, IDOT Safe Routes to School Program, $250,000 grant awarded to fix Paxton's Clayton Hale Bridge. This article is by Will Brumleave from the Ford County Chronicle, Paxton. The city has been awarded a $250,000 grant to help fund the restoration of the Clayton Hale Bridge, a pedestrian bridge over the Canadian National Railroad tracks downtown that has been temporarily closed for a year while awaiting needed structural repairs. The awarding of the Safe Routes to School grant by the Illinois Department of Transportation came as welcome news to Mayor Bill Ingold, who hopes to see the bridge fixed soon and reopen before the bridge was closed to the public in April of 2025, after an inspection revealed structural issues with its approaches. It was regularly used by Paxton Buckley Lota students to get to and from school. "We're super excited about this," Ingold said Friday, "and once we can get that bridge back into operation, that will be great news." Governor J.B. Pritzker and IDOT Secretary Gia Biagi announced the awarding of $12 million in Safe Routes to School grants of up to $250,000 apiece to municipalities and public schools to help fund 68 projects statewide. The projects are designed to make walking, biking, and rolling to school safer and more accessible, ranging from improving neighborhood infrastructure to supporting community educational and safety programs. Paxton grant is expected to be used to not only repair the bridge, but also to add new crosswalk signage and signals to nearby Railroad Avenue and improve the sidewalks there and on West Orleans Street on the other side of the bridge. "The bearings under the bridge have fully deteriorated," Michael Livermore, a senior client advisor for the Clark Dietz engineering firm, told the city council last August. "The abutment walls also need some reinforcement. Drainage aspects of the bridge around those abutments need to be addressed." The bridge is named in memory of the late Clayton Hale, who spent many hours there watching trains go by. "This is the best news I've heard today," Mr. Hale's mother, Diane, said in a text message Friday. What blessing. Bill Ingold had spoken to us in the fall about the bridge issue, and we had to write a letter to express our concerns regarding the bridge. "I'm beyond thankful for the bridge to receive the grant. No words can express how I feel. Just tears of happiness." Around the area also awarded Safe Routes to School grants announced Friday. Village of Rantoul, $250,000 for safety and accessibility upgrades to sidewalks and intersections adjacent to J.W. Ader Junior High. And the Village of Tolono, $50,000 for the development of a community travel plan. And Village of St. Joseph, $49,000 for the development of a community travel plan. And another one from Danville, Danville shootings. Gatherings focus on call to action to reduce gun violence. This is by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. A united call to action was the focus of a community-wide night of prayer Thursday at Hope Unlimited Church and community meeting at Laura Lee Fellowship House to seek support and guidance for families affected by gun violence and prevent it in the community. The meetings come in the wake of separate shootings last weekend that resulted in the city's first homicide of the year and several injuries. Curtis Beasley IV, a peace ambassador with the Project Success Youth Council, played high school football with the victim of Saturday's homicide, 22-year-old Ricky Dandridge Jr. "We were both linebackers and spent a lot of time together in practice," he said. He kept a smile on his face and brought a lot of positive energy to our practices. He had an aura about him that was indicative of his potential to do good things. It's a shame that his life had to be cut so short. He said it was traumatizing to learn about the weekend's wave of violence. While I prefer not to get too specific, it seems that now more than ever, people are quick to pull out their phones and record everything, which I believe only makes the impact of the violence tenfold, Beasley said. I wish people could have the decency and respect to know that it is not okay to record people in such vulnerable moments. What I also think is that we need to urge people to take gun violence prevention more seriously, he added. My thought specifically is that it is not taken seriously until it is too late. People share their thoughts and begin to converse about the impact once the damage is done. Now more than ever, we need to mobilize toward being proactive about limiting gun violence in Danville. Mary Catherine Roberson, a community activist and candidate for state representative, spoke at the meeting, noting her involvement in the City of Champaign's multi-million-dollar community gun violence reduction blueprint. She said some best practices are already at work across the county, including methods pioneered by the Bay Area Peacekeepers in Richmond, California, to break the cycle of retaliation and help youth who are on the wrong side of the law find jobs. Models that treat gun violence as a public health epidemic and investments in community violence intervention strategies beyond policing. Because the problem is rooted trauma, poverty, hopelessness, and lack of opportunity and investment. She and others asked if other community members are willing to step up and work with the Youth Council's peace ambassadors on their events, hire young people, and work with the Violence Prevention Coalition and others on gun violence prevention. Thursday night's meetings were just the start of the community's response. Lestan Hoskins, lead pastor at Mosaic City Church, said, a pastor's roundtable has been planned for 4 p.m. Thursday in the event room at the Danville Public Library. The public is invited to join the faith leaders as they discuss and create a course of action to combat the violence plaguing the city. Hoskins Church also is presenting its 6th annual anti-violence basketball tournament starting at 9 a.m. May 30th at Danville Area Community College's Mary Miller Gym. The free tournament is for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Registration information can be found through the church. It's an opportunity for our community to come together and support our youth to make good decisions, Hoskins said. We'll take a short break now and return with a second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, May 10th, 2026. Please stay tuned.